Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics is with me now from Little Rock. Roby, did you think we'd ever see the other side of the 2018 midterms?
Of course, Kyle. I always look forward to Christmas Day and forms of elections, and we opened all the presents last night, and we got a lot of what we thought we might get, and then we got a few surprises. So isn't that kind of how Christmas sometimes works?
That is, and then there are a couple of mayoral packages that say don't open until New Year's Day. We'll talk about
that. Maybe a little sooner than that.
Yes. Okay, well, I'm just going with the metaphor. Let's start with a few things that are the same on the first Wednesday of November as they were on the first Monday of the month. Arkansas, deeply red state. All four GOP members of the U.S. House going back to D.C. All seven constitutional officers in the state are Republicans. And for the most part, those races were decided fairly early into the counting.
They were, and I think we still have some super majorities or close to super majorities in the Arkansas legislature for the Republicans, too. Yeah, look, we've seen this trend. It's been building and building and building for the last three, four election cycles, and it continues. I wouldn't say that there was a blue wave in Arkansas. I would advocate that the red tide is rising in Arkansas. Those big statewide and congressional races that you talked to, went pretty much according to what we thought they would. We felt like, you know, the Democratic competition that was in some of those races was mostly, they were newcomers and fresh faces and don't have political brands of their own, and they were climbing a pretty big uphill battle. They all performed admirably, and they ran good campaigns, but the Republican brand and the power of incumbency was too much for them. So I don't think we were surprised by the governor's race or any of the down ballot races, and all the congressional races pretty much held form for what we had seen in some of the public polling we've done, and lend themselves to that narrative of this is a Republican state.
Your polling colleague, Jay Barth, professor of political science at Hendricks College, said earlier this week he was going to pay particular attention to Democrat numbers in the 3rd District to see if the party was gaining in this part of the state. What do the numbers tell us this morning?
Well, the numbers this morning tell us that they did not really overperform too far over where they have done traditionally. What we've seen in midterm elections in the past, where there may not have been any Democratic challengers to some of those seats, was different this time around because there was competition. But you saw some pretty large majorities in most of the Republican legislative seats in that region of the state, particularly in Benton County. I think we were wondering if those races, those margins might be much, much tighter in many instances. And when I'm looking at the preliminary unofficial results here, I mean, nobody sweated too much on the Republican side up in northwest Arkansas. Maybe a couple of races, but certainly not the majority of them.
The three ballot issues that survived court challenges all passed. Voter ID now part of the state constitution, casinos closer to being part of the landscape here, and minimum wage going up. Any surprises there, either in results or the margins?
Not really to me. I thought that voter ID and minimum wage would pass by some very healthy percentages, and they did. Those are very populist issues, and they're easy to understand concepts for a lot of Arkansas voters. You don't have to explain what voter ID is for somebody to get the idea of it. You don't have to explain minimum wage. And I think on casinos, I think we saw in our polling where the numbers had reversed in the last few weeks, particularly right up before early voting started. You saw some momentum for the casinos. There were a lot of millions of dollars of pro-casino ads ran. There was not really any paid, organized opposition that did anything to counter those messages. And I think casinos are an issue where Arkansans kind of understand them regardless of what the details of the proposal were. You're either for casinos or you're against casinos. And I think we're all kind of accustomed to casinos now. We've heard the arguments for years. We've seen some proposals before that we haven't got to vote on. This one was a pretty clean one. Surrounding states have them, and we're probably a little more comfortable with casinos because we've seen the lottery and how it's kind of impacted Arkansas. So I think all of that has made for a little bit more of an environment favorable to that. So its margin of victory was comfortable, but not a blowout, and I think that's what we were expecting.
And these are not medicinal casinos, so we may see them sooner rather than later.
Yeah, there's still some legwork to be done. Right. Oaklawn and Southland will move very quickly, I think, with some of their proposed changes once the state legislature early next year puts whatever enabling legislation has to go into effect. I think it will be a little bit longer road, though, for Jefferson County and Pope County. We have to see what those local communities prefer in that instance, and there'll be some homework to be done on that. And I'll have to admit, I did not see the outcome of the Pope County ordinance in terms of what voters decided down there. There was something to dictate some preference on casinos for a local option, and I'm not familiar with what happened in that election.
You know, in years and decades past, Arkansas representatives to Washington, D.C. have held some pretty important roles. Senator Fulbright, chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, Wilbur Mills, head of the House Ways and Means, Joe T. Robinson, Senate Majority Leader. But lately, Arkansas hasn't had great timing for leadership positions. Senator Blanche Lincoln was defeated just as she was headed toward the chair of the powerful Ag Committee in the Senate. And now 3rd District Congressman Steve Womack, recently selected to head the House Budget Committee, going back to D.C. with a comfortable margin, but now not as a member of the majority party.
Yeah, none of the four congressmen will be members of the majority party, obviously, with them all being Republicans. And that will change, and that'll be a very different circumstance for them and one that they've not been accustomed to because they've been in the majority their entire time in Congress. So, yeah, now the shoe will be on the other foot. Democrats will be the controlling members of those House committees. I do think we'll see a lot more oversight coming of the executive branch of government as a result of this change. I think that'll be the number one thing that Democrats try to put into place. I think it will still be difficult to see any kind of compromise for any type of significant legislation to pass. You've got a divided House and Congress now, and obviously a Republican president. There's not going to be a lot of bipartisanship all of a sudden because of this election cycle. I think, if anything, when we look at national returns, we're as complex and complicated and divided as we were before the election. And but for Steve Womack, yeah, he'll lose that prestigious position there and some of the influence that goes with it. And I think the other thing, too, to keep in mind with Democrats holding control of the House, that's the spending side of Congress there. They will outline some different priorities that may force the president and the Republican Senate to do some things different from, for instance, tax cuts. I doubt we will see anything significant there unless it's a middle-income tax cut. So there'll be some policy changes that will change as a result of spending, but I don't think you'll see any, like, major pieces of legislation or reform legislation get through. There just won't be enough of a coalition of bipartisan support to do that. One other thing on that, I keep an eye on Senator Bozeman and on Senator Cotton with the gains that the Republicans are going to make in the U.S. Senate. We may see that their influence and their time of being in office now lends them to some prestige. I wouldn't be surprised if we see them get some new assignments in this next Congress that might have a little bit more power than what they've had in the past.
A high-profile mayoral race in northwest Arkansas in Bentonville headed to a runoff. Not a surprise. As is the mayoral race in Little Rock, what can you tell us about the results there?
Well, you had some good candidates in both of those races, some organized candidates, some very great campaigners, some people obviously with big coalitions of support. With Stephanie Warman and Jim Webb up in Bentonville, we'll see that runoff come about. That was a pretty close race with Webb having a little bit of a lead. And when you look at the other three candidates in that race, kind of hard to tell where, you know, if any of them's support would gravitate naturally to one of the other two front runners, and would that even change anything? This will be about getting the people that voted for you back to the polls in the runoff election. It will not be about adding very many of those other voters to your support. Same thing in Little Rock. We figured that race might go 1, 2, 3. We didn't know who 1, 2, or 3 would be, and I think Frank Scott really surprised people. He surged early in the evening and late in the evening and has a pretty sizable lead over second-place finisher Baker Kirst in the Little Rock mayor's race. I don't know what Warwick Sabin, the very close third-place finisher, will say to his supporters. I would suspect he will say, vote your heart and do what you think is right. And I do think there will be a group of his supporters that will break to one of those two candidates, and I don't know what it will be, but I doubt it'll be enough to change significantly the outcome of that race. Again, it'll be about turnout and Frank Scott getting his supporters back to the polls and Baker Curris doing the same thing.
All right. We have a February 29th in 2020, which means we're 731 days away from the 2020 election. What is a way too early forecast, something that we can think about as we move now to the next election cycle?
Well, a race to watch will be what Senator Tom Cotton does. Does he, there's always speculation. He's always going to get mentioned as a potential person to either move to the Trump administration or he stays put and, looks to 2022, I think is the next time. He's up in 2020 for reelection. So does he run for reelection? I think that he will. If he's not been tapped by the Trump administration. And really, I mean, Kyle, right now in national politics, 3 or 4 hours is the equivalent of about a month of politics. So for us to look to 2020, I have no earthly idea. Although I will say there will be a lot of drama in Congress and in Washington, D.C., and we can expect a whole lot of rough sea waters between now and then, and what that will do to the political climate and where things stand by February 2020, I think is a pretty hard crystal ball to read into. But I can promise you there'll be controversy between now and then.
You heard it here. Well, maybe not first, but you heard it here again. Roby Brock is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. You can follow analysis, results, and runoffs around the clock at talkbusiness.net. Thank you, Roby.
You bet, Kyle.